Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
The government has agreed extradition and mutual legal assistance treaties with the United Arab Emirates, which will facilitate the return to Ireland for trial of senior members of the Kinahan organised crime gang. The treaties are expected to be signed by Minister for Justice Helen McEntee in Abu Dhabi next week, following negotiations with her Emirati counterpart. Speaking with reporters at government buildings this evening, Minister McEntee said the treaties will target any criminal who's hiding or thinks that they can hide in the UAE. The investigations editor with the Sunday World and presenter of the Crime World podcast, Nicola Tallant, and former Gorda Assistant Commissioner Michael O'Sullivan joins me now for some more on this. You're both very welcome indeed to the programme. Michael, I might turn to you first of all. I called it zoning in on the Kinahan crime gang. How significant are these extradition and mutual legal assistance treaties in your opinion?
Well, to have a treaty with the UAE is a huge advantage for organised crime, for the organised crime investigators. It's a massive disadvantage for the likes of the Kinahans and the many other criminals, not just Irish criminals, a lot of European criminals, in the what they regard as the last refuge out there in the UAE. And they are of the opinion that they were never going to be extradited. So this is certainly a turning point. It's a very worrying time for organised crime out there, a very worrying time for the Kinahans. It's they're rapidly running out of options. When we investigated them, they moved to the Netherlands, and then after getting the cooperation of the Dutch police, they moved to the south of Spain. And then after that, they've finally gone to the UAE. They really haven't got many options left, certainly not since the Americans put a bounty on their heads. So the world is a smaller place, and today it just got a lot smaller for them.
And that really turned the dial up in the pressure cooker, didn't it, when the Americans got interested, as you told us before, Michael, on this programme. But can you tell me how this will work in practicality? If these treaties are signed next week, as we expect, what happens in practice then?
Well, in practice, there's going to be a long legal battle, as with any extradition anywhere. But at the end of the day, how it affects the organised crime people who are on the run and who are evading justice, it means that the clock is ticking, really. That it's only a matter of time before they get a knock on the door and get extradited, or at least the proceedings to start for extradition. Mm-hmm. In the last couple of years, there's only been two people extradited, to my knowledge, two organised crime managers, for want of a better term, leaders of organised crime groups, one a Dutch guy and the other one from the Mafia. So the UAE are extremely reluctant to extradite anyone. So with this treaty, obviously, they've given a green light, and it's certainly, it's a green light that none of the criminals, none of the Irish criminals in Dubai want to see. And certainly the criminals here who are gathering up their money and have their fallback plan, that they will follow the Kinahans and the likes of them to Dubai when they have their money made, because they're a step away from European justice. And now that option is now closing rapidly.
Who are they closing in on then? Who is named on the wanted list? And who would these treaties be worked on? And I know they're in the works for some time. And who are the targets, let's say?
Well, the targets obviously are the Kinahan crime group, and they were the one that probably brought it over the edge when you have the likes of the Americans putting pressure on the various countries, and everyone likes to cooperate with the Americans, so they tend then to sort of put it on the global. It gets put on the global level that these guys are not just wanted by the Irish; they're wanted by the Americans. So it puts it on a completely different plane, with the result that other countries sit up and take notice. And with the Americans' global reach with the Drugs Enforcement Agency and their other agencies, they make the world a very small place. And one of the few places left was Dubai. Mm-hmm. And I think now that, as I say, that door is rapidly rapidly closing.
And I want to bring in Nicola Tallant in just a moment, Michael, as to where else these guys could go. But my, it brings me to the next question I have for you, Michael, because a long legal battle, you say, will now ensue. These criminals will know that this is coming down the track. Surely they'll try and get out of Dodge.
Yeah, well, that's without a doubt, they'll have a fallback plan. But their options are extremely limited. Where are they going to go with their families? To perhaps a third world country? There's not many countries similar to the UAE that will tolerate and facilitate people who are wanted on a European arrest warrant or indeed wanted by the Americans. Mm-hmm. Very few countries will, for want of a better term, insult the Americans and take on board organised criminals into their country.
Stay with me, Michael O'Sullivan, former Assistant Court of the Commissioner, for a moment if you can. I'm joined, as I say, as well by Nicola Tallant, who's investigations editor with the Sunday World and presenter of the Crime World podcast, and who we've spoken to about these issues on the programme as well in the past. Nicola, you're very welcome back. And specifically that question to you, because I know you've looked at that, into it, where else could these guys go?
Well, I could see two places they could go, right? And the first is Iran, and the second, maybe Russia. So they're not, falling over places where they could be welcomed. And how long would that welcome last? How much money would they have to bring into those economies to have the doors opened? And politically, you look at what's happening across the world and those instabilities. You see how organized crime is so connected with politics, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Iran in a position with everything that's going on in the Middle East. You have Russia, obviously at war with Ukraine, and Putin as the president there. You know, they're not exactly the most attractive territories in the world. And what about their lifestyle? Because they have been able to and afford it, a very luxurious lifestyle that most of us can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. Can they bring their families into places like that? What do they do with their families now that this pressure is on? I have to say, as regards this signing of these agreements as such, it is great news. Everything is moving in the right direction. But other countries have already signed these treaties and agreements with the UAE, the likes of Belgium. I was talking to a colleague there today who tells me that since they've signed up, they've had two wanted home out of 50. And it's a very slow process. This isn't something that's going to be, you know, coming to its conclusion by the end of this year.
Did your Belgian colleague tell you why that is?
Because the Emirates still pick and choose when and what they do. You know, it's a monarchy. It's not a democracy. It's not exactly, you know, there are rules and there are certainly legal structures there, but ultimately decisions are made by a few very privileged who will do ultimately what they want, and that's the way it is. And we're playing the game, undoubtedly, with the UAE in our efforts to get home these people that are wanted for horrendous crimes in this country and beyond.
So are you saying that there may be an element of horse trading here? If the UAE, I don't know if this is the way it happens in practice and by stealth, but if they pick and choose the targets that they're willing to hand over, let's say, could there be a game of horse trading with the state authorities then?
I've no doubt that goes on all the time behind the scenes. Worryingly, you look at the UAE, you look at Rafael Imperiale, who was eventually returned to Italy, but was initially facing extradition. And then the extradition was refused. It took the Prime Minister of Italy to travel out there to do whatever it was they had to do in order to get Rafael Imperiale back. There has been other concerning situations with senior members of organised crime groups like Eden Gassanen, wanted in the Netherlands and was brought into custody and released. So I'm just a little bit cynical about it all. I'd like to see sort of an end product. You'd like to see the likes of the McGovern situation come to a conclusion, him back here on home soil in front of the Special Criminal Court where he's wanted for murder. And then things might become a little bit clearer and we'll have a clearer path. But having said all that, everything is definitely moving in the right direction.
But I think you make a very cogent argument for your cynicism, Nicola. I'd love to get Michael O'Sullivan's opinion on that, because the United Arab Emirates, Michael, has been reluctant to extradite Western criminals in the past, haven't they? They've been accused of using those criminals as political bargaining chips, which is exactly the point that Nicola is making.
Yeah, she's right to a point. It's the UAE have quite a lot of organized criminals from various countries, and the reason they're there is they're tolerated and they're enabled and they operate from there, but they don't commit crime in the UAE. It is only when the pressure gets intolerable and it becomes embarrassing in relation to a particular individual who a particular country may wish to have returned home, that they then sit down and decide, well, this looks a little bit embarrassing, and I think we'll send this guy back. Not many people. There's two I know of who are sent back, and they were extreme cases. In one stage, the Radwan Taji, the Dutch government, put a lot of pressure on the people in the UAE, and they were getting a lot of bad press, and they decided, okay, look, we send him back. And so it's not over till it's over, but it's a very positive move.
The other side of it is, if the Kenahans know, for example, that I could be facing life in Russia, living yes. under duress in an oppressive regime where I could be leaned on for payoffs or assets or whatever the case may be. Will I try my luck here first? I mean, will they be thinking along those lines?
No, they'll have a plan B, and they will go to some other country. Russia, you know, it's a possibility. Iran is a possibility too. Not exactly great holiday destinations, you know, but I think they could go to a third world country with a change of passport and a change of identity. I would say that's part of the plan. It's difficult to say, but they will definitely have a plan B.
Nicola, finally on that, if that had to happen for the Kenyans, that would be a nightmare for them, would it?
Yeah, I suppose it would be, but it would keep them a step ahead again. You'd have to go into all sorts of negotiations. But I do think if we're talking about the Emirates looking as if they're playing ball, you know, politically, I think you talk about embarrassment. Michael talks about embarrassment. Can you imagine what it would be like if they let them leave the country? You know,
indeed. Yeah.
I mean, these people are supposed to be under watch. They're under sanction from the US. At the very least, we should be expecting that they're under surveillance.
To leave the country as the net of world justice really is closing in. Look, it's fascinating. Nicola Tallant, thank you very much indeed. And Michael O'Sullivan, thank you as well.